Thank you, Heather. So as you might have guessed by now, we're asking for a lot of input from people who are here, and we're really interested in engaging the larger public health audience. So we don't take our jobs lightly in terms of really trying to reach out and get some input. We're really interested in having useful tools that engage as opposed to the shiny tools that Amy was referring to. Although shiny is not bad. Shiny can be very fun, but that can't be the whole reason for it. So I'm going to be talking about what we're calling the Community Health Portal. And let me just go through. I really tried to strip out as many slides that I thought would be duplicative of previous presentations, but I will have some that I'll zip through because they were presented before. So here we are. This is the Division of Cancer Control Population Sciences. Our purpose here in our jobs is reducing the cancer burden, and Abdul also already talked about our job as being synthesizing knowledge coming from a wide variety of sources. And I think that's a real good theme for the kinds of projects we're working with, is that we're looking to synthesize information coming from a number of different sources, and that is not at all easy, either technologically or organizationally, but I think it's a worthy goal. That's what we're pursuing. Yet another plug for this particular issue. I'll just slide right past that.
I have no financial.
There is one that nobody else did mention. Yeah, let me get to there. This is something that Brad Hesse is the editor for, as well as Amy Abernethy, who's at Duke. And this is looking at how we can, this is an inaugural issue for translational behavioral medicine. And so this is looking for discussing ways in which we can translate research into practice in terms of how behavioral medicine can be practiced. And I think that has good applicability for the kinds of work that public health workers, public health researchers do, because oftentimes what we're dealing with are the social determinants of disease, and so the behavioral aspect is very important. So you've seen this before. I'll just go through it really quickly. The important part here, as far as I'm concerned, is that we have these disparate data sources at the bottom. And my background is mostly technical and in sort of database kinds of things. So I'm interested in the challenges of taking data that comes from many different sources. I did my share of analyses and used SAS to try and bring together data sets that were from different sources. And I know the pain that's involved in trying to do that. So I like to reduce pain as much as possible. So if we can use GEM, Phoenix, Promise, other kinds of programs to help to do the data harmonization and the data standardization, then that can make this possible, where we're looking to target analyses of data, aggregation of data, exploration of data for different target populations, different people. There could be epidemiologists who are interested. There could be community health workers. And it's kind of where we're targeting is the Community Health Data Initiative. So I think it's a worthy challenge, again, of taking source data that is useful in many different ways. And that's, again, a challenge to make that possible. Our first project in PopSciGrid version 1 was a proof of concept. And we had 14 data sets spanning 6 years, and it was a way of taking information from NHIS, from HINTS, and some tobacco tax data, pulling it together. And to be honest, it was not that interesting in terms of you couldn't kind of walk away and be able to do anything with this, but it was a way of saying to ourselves that yes, we can use the technology, we're using technology that came out of the CA Big program, which is a biomedical informatics grid program out of the NCI, and wanted to show that at least we could do this, that it was technically feasible in this particular way, in bringing together different data from surveys in this case. So informing our current effort is the Community Health Data Initiative, and this has come out over this last year. Also, data.gov, if you're familiar at all with that site, is a way of bringing together data sources that the federal government has access to and making them publicly available. Apps.gov is another site where you start seeing applications that can pull these data sets. And that's kind of our goal, is to provide a more advanced proof of concept for how you can do this with public health data. And so let me go through that. So we're building on our original proof of concept. Again, we're targeting consumers and decision makers, so that would be in the community health area, looking for community empowerment. And these are really important, the data sharing, collaboration, and communication. So in whatever way we can encourage, these are all important pieces in order for us to get some usable information out there for people to be able to act upon. So previously we were focusing on smoking and tobacco. We're staying with that because we have a lot of expertise in-house and there's a lot of data about this. And I won't go into the technical pieces here. So one of the challenges, again, is in how we take data. This comes from cancer.org. And so many people, when they're looking at trying to understand and explore data, a big sheet of information like this is not very helpful. So we're looking at ways we can visualize the data. So the map that you saw and our proof of concept was one way of doing it. Here are some examples that other people are doing. So it's, in some ways, we as a program are competing with many different visualizations that are possible out there. This one actually, this site, it's called Many Eyes from IBM, has been around for quite some time, and this is, just gives you an idea. Anybody can take a set of data, a table, upload it, put it into visualization, and this kind of gives an indication. There's no veracity necessary. I mean, there's a lot of junk that's up there, but it kind of shows you what is possible in a very simple way. This is a site called good.is. They have a big infographics area. So this gives you another example of how people are visualizing data. This is suburban sprawl and commute times. And so figuring out how it is that, what are the visual metaphors that we can use for conveying information in a literate way, so that we're not trying to make up new icons, new iconography, so that people would understand what we're trying to do. So we're looking at information that's out there, at people that have done work before us. This comes out of State Cancer Profiles. So this is one site that informs the work that Mike was talking about earlier. So this gives you incidence rate, cases per 100,000 across the country. And Robert Wood Johnson has done quite a bit of work in many areas with health. Again, looking at ways we can visualize this information and looking at national maps. They have a feature here. This doesn't work on a slide, of course, but you can animate this through a whole time range. So we're looking at doing that as well as a way of understanding the temporal nature as well as the spatial nature of some of this information we're looking at. So let me take you through the timeline. We're partway through this already. We did have we were at the Health 2.0 conference, which was held earlier in October, and this is where the developer challenge was issued that we talked about. We're now at this particular conference, and we're presenting more information. And actually, what we're really interested in is getting some feedback from folks. I will be up at the NCI booth at noon, I guess it is, later today, and I would be interested in talking after the presentation as well. Anybody who would be interested in providing feedback on the way we have done our visualizations, I have my own opinions about it, but I'm interested in finding out how people respond to what we've done so far, and I'll show you some screenshots of that. And then we're targeting, our next big milestone is a conference, the HICS conference, which is a system science conference in Hawaii at the first of the year. And we have a session there, workshop as well as a session. And again, we're taking this PopSci Grid idea forward. One thing we're doing is, I think, Kelly, were you the one who mentioned the challenge? I can't remember who it was, or Abdul? Abdul. Anyway, so we have
the
well, so we have the challenge, and we have winners, and the winners that will be announced will be able to come to this conference in Hawaii. So we're looking at not just so the PopSci grid that we're going to show you is a way of inspiring others who can do the same kind of thing, but maybe in a better way, and that's really very important for us. Here's the challenge that you've already seen some information about. So here's screenshot of one of the different sites. We've been working with a group at Rensselaer Polytechnic. It's Tetherless World Constellation, and they've been a really great partner in this. This shows using, has anybody ever heard of Hans Rosling or seen any of the TED conference material? He's done quite a bit of work with data from all over the world and using these bubble charts. So this is actually, you can get an animation going. It will show you, in this case, the looking at tax per pack of cigarettes versus, in this case, we're looking at bans, so the policy aspect in this. So we're looking in this chart, looking at the state cigarette tax, smoking ban coverage from a time period. Every state is represented by one of these circles, and the color of the circles gives you some categorization of the prevalence of smoking in those states. So if you do the animation, you kind of see, you know, some interesting trends. The purpose here, as we told our statisticians many times, is we're not trying to show things that people can then go to their physician and talk to them about this. It's really to give an indication of what the data looks like, and if there's something that's interesting that a researcher finds or a community health worker finds, then they're able to, thank you, then they would be able to take a look at the data more closely. So it's meant to inspire, it's meant to get people thinking more about what the data is that's out there. Here's another screenshot. In this case, we're looking, again, we're looking at prevalence at the top chart here, the graph. This looks at the different policies in bars, workplaces, and restaurants. And this is a representation of the coverage within a state. In this case, we're looking at Alabama, and we're looking at the year 2007 for this map here. So we're getting a lot of different kinds of information in one particular screen, and one of the questions that I'd like to be able to ask you, we have a questionnaire that we can kind of go through if you're interested, is, you know, does this really serve the purpose that we would like it to serve? Are you able to take a look at this and get some useful information or know something more than you did before? So we have this prevalence, the smoking ban coverage, and then the price per pack of cigarettes, as well as the tax per pack of cigarettes. This is for Alabama, and then you take a look at New York, and if you just go back and forth a little bit, you can see that in Alabama you've had your prevalence kind of going up since 93 and kind of plateauing, maybe a little bit of drop here. Whoops. And then with New York, you've had generally a decline. Trying to relate that temporally with either smoking ban coverage or with the price per pack, it's not very clear how that really works out. So again, based on some theory, you can think that there would be some relationship between the two, but this is meant, again, to inspire research from the data that we do have available. So these are the partners that we've had in this development. We've got people in Tetherless World Constellation. These are at RPI, Sonic Laboratories in Northwestern. This is a Noshir contractor. He had done the initial work on PopSci Grid version 1. These are the NCI folks, and then Lila and myself from SAIC. And I think that's it. So thank you very much. Engage the local, I'm sorry. Well, I think that initially what we're doing, again, we're at a very preliminary stage with this. So our first effort is to get some examples out. This is a good venue for us, I think, for just getting some feedback. And going forward, we would certainly want to find a way of engaging more explicitly, perhaps through conferences or meetings where we could have a good discussion or engagement with people that are doing work at the local level. So that's a very good question, and it's in our minds. We just don't have anything laid out as yet.
I think we're open to feedback because, as Paul said, we're starting at the state level with relatively easy proof of concepts right now. But as you say, the whole notion of the Community Health Data Initiative is local impact, and it's not just federal or even state level.
Right.
And so we really are interested in finding out more about future iterations of this PopSci portal and how it could have that local impact.
And one of the challenges also in bringing it down to a county level or even a census tract level is about privacy concerns. So we're mindful of how, again, we can bring data together, have it be informative, have it be inspiring, while honoring privacy concerns. And so there's a multi-dimensional set of challenges there trying to satisfy a lot of constraints. But we think there's a way of doing it. We're interested in bringing it down to that level.
Yes. Another question I have is that there are different grants all over that are funding different things at different local levels that is relevant to what you're discussing today, creating the web portal and all these kind of things. So what efforts are you making to align those funding that we are not just developing silos or spending, duplicating spending and things like that? Because I know that there's a particular grant, if you go to New York City site, there's interactive web portal developed, and I know that it's very similar to what we're trying to do. And many other locals are trying to do the same thing. So how do we bring all this in together that we're not duplicating efforts and we have a well-coordinated effort to achieve a better?
Again, it's an excellent question. And I think that I've seen the same thing that you have, that you know, Wisconsin has a great site for looking at tobacco in their state. Oftentimes it is locally oriented in that way. And I think that we're looking initially for some inspiration from some of those local efforts to not try and duplicate and try and learn from what's been done. And ultimately getting feedback from those who would like something more uniform, because certainly if you're a state coordinator, you know, you don't want to have to look at many different sources of information in order to inform your efforts, you know, whether it's across the state or across the nation. So we're interested in finding ways of collapsing down the huge world that's out there. And that's a little bit of what I was trying to show as well, is that with all the different visualization sources we have, whether it's Robert Wood Johnson or Canson.org or whatever it might be, a lot of people are very excited about this, and I think rightly so. There's a lot of possibility there, and it's sort of natural there's going to be a blossoming at first, and then at some point that will need to come down in order to really be able to communicate effectively. And I think that Russ has some things that he might want to say about dissemination.
Could I add to that as well?
Absolutely.
That, NIH and NCI's mandate is also primarily research focused, and so part of what we're planning at the Higgs conference in January is we're bringing together folks from CDC and folks from HHS who have launched the CHDI initiative. And what we want to get out of it for NCI is to develop a funding opportunity for really getting into the research issues on communicating and visualizing information. So that could be at a local level as well. We don't want to preclude that. And I think, as Paul said, this is sort of a proof of concept to inspire the community and to get us thinking about how we might address federal, state, and local level planners, for example. But some of it also has to do with our mandate for coming up with funding opportunities to advance the research and innovation. But that's why we also find it important to connect with folks at CDC who are more of the effector arm of HHS as well as other entities.
So, Russ, go ahead. You had raised your hand.
This is a great example of the, you know, open government movement things, and I love the level and the potential for, you know, really giving citizens and community groups and things, some real tools and things they can work with. I'm sure you've thought quite a bit about it. As we get down to smaller and smaller levels, and the reliability of our data gets less and less. Wondering, what about the issue of, you know, the infamous thing of somebody running off and, you know, looking at running off on that. And I'm just wondering what thoughts you have or questions for people using it.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, that apparently is the nightmare that the statisticians live with in our division. And they have got a big sore spot about some of these spurious clusters that seem to have appeared from data and trying to explain, you know, how there may or may not be any clear indication, whether it's Long Island breast cancer or whatever it might be. So I think that it's a matter of balancing out the risk that we would take and being very upfront about that, and the disclaimers that we put into the sites to say that, you know, this is indicated to, you know, this is the intention of this is to inform and to encourage further exploration. It's not meant to be a way of making any determinations, and instead of, you know, see your physician for any conditions, you know, see your local statistician if you have some real good questions. Maybe we'll put that in there as well.
But I would just say also, methodologically, it's a great opportunity to think about multi-level modeling. If we can get the data sets up there in a useful way and, you know, just start visualizing some of the relationships and patterns that may exist, it's an opportunity to test that empirically and actually, you know, show variability at different levels. So.
That's a very good point.
He's part of a group that's setting up a meeting at a statistics conference next year looking at these issues of integrating data at different levels and really how to make sense of it in terms of statistical models.
Yeah, and I was also going to say there's some people within our sister program, the surveillance research program, who are doing some small area estimation and taking using data at a granular level to inform data at other levels, and, you know, which gives you a little more, you know, you feel a little more comfortable that these are, you know, actual results or they're kind of based on kind of very systematic and rigorous statistics.
So eventually down the road, we'd like to develop this portal with partners to really address some of these issues that you raised.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just have actually an overall comment. Since there have been so many plugs today, I thought I'd throw in one more. since you've mentioned Phoenix several times, and I work at RTI, I thought I'd mention that to check out our booth up in the exhibit where we have information on Phoenix.
Thank you. I appreciate that, yeah.
It's a good reminder that there are other systems out there trying to do similar things, trying to get standardized measures so we can, again, kind of do this sharing of data. So yeah, we applaud your efforts. It's really great.
Are there any other questions about the, yes,
yeah.
Bottom-up process, but now we could have our discussant make a few comments, overall take-home messages, and perhaps we'll have a few more minutes for conversation after that.
Thanks, Heather, and thank you for that question. That's really good timing. I think some of the take-homes that we wanted to present out of this session were that we do have these initiatives. They are relevant, and as you said, we're looking for input and participation from public health communities. So like my colleagues have said, please get in touch with us if you have an interest in any of these initiatives. Beyond that, we're also working on a number of different funding opportunities. We do have the Developers Challenge that's come out right now. We also have a Trans-NIH PAR program announcement with a special review committee on research on dissemination and implementation in health. And that's something you should talk to Russ and to Mike about if you want more information about that. We also have our Small Business Innovations Research Program, and this is where we've really been able to get some interesting ideas out on funding, grants, and contracts related to harmonizing data, so similar to what we're trying to do with the PopSci Grid, but really going beyond that in terms of trying to get the research out into practice, and also looking at new technologies like mobile devices and how we can use them to help improve the science as well. So if you have any questions about SBIR, I'd be glad to talk about that offline. Finally, the Informatics for Consumer Health Alert Service we think is an important initiative because what it does is our whole effort there has been to partner up with important groups like NSF, like ARC, like the ONC and NIST,
who have really been charged with funneling these billions of dollars in health IT out to the community. And the whole point of this initiative has been to remind everyone at the table there of the importance of behavioral and social science research and public health when we're talking about health informatics. And so one of the ways to really get involved in the process is to participate through the alert service. Finally, I think that we wanted to throw out some questions to you, one of which is because we are primarily a research institution, we'd love to hear more about what you might have in terms of ideas for how NCI could facilitate and support innovative research in health informatics related to public health outcomes. And of course, it would have to tie into cancer, cancer prevention and control. But I think as someone said, we see ourselves as being involved in these initiatives that also have relevance to other health outcomes as well. So I'm going to throw it out to the audience here. If there are any ideas and any suggestions, we're open to that.
So we actually work in a fairly small group that's kind of at the cusp of using novel technologies and a lot of different disciplines to look at data in healthcare. And one of the central challenges we face is getting to large data sets that ask the questions that we want to ask. So what Dr. Moser brought up about standardizing questions. And then additionally, the challenges I believe you're facing with getting primary researchers who are publishing about specific methodologies or treatments to actually put that data out there for people to use. That's proven to be a major hindrance. And that's the type of data that allows people to figure out which sort of healthcare interventions are really doing something and go from there. So that's a problem that we continue to face.
Do you want to talk about the idea of data sharing?
Yeah, when you say we, who's, what organization?
We're the Abramson Center, we're in the Texas Medical Center.
Interesting. Yeah, this whole idea of data sharing, it's a lot of things. Yeah, a lot of people say, yeah, it'd be great to do it, I'd be happy to do it when push comes to shove. People are oftentimes reluctant or unwilling to share their data. So we have to kind of figure out what are the barriers and how do we get around those. it's not easy because you know they have all the issues about confidentiality and HIPAA comes up and all these types of things. So we need to reassure the researchers that, that you know the data are not going to be used for any kind of you know untoward purpose and that they hopefully have some control over the data, who receives the data. That's what we're trying to do with GEM. And it involves you know talking to a lot of people getting data use agreements. You've got to involve lawyers and things just to you know get all those legal and ethical issues. And we're giving it a shot. We're giving it a try. And again, trying to work on the incentives and get around the barriers. And we'll try to more experiment here. We'll see how it works.
One of the ways that we're trying to incentivize data sharing is through our centers grants, which is where we give large-scale money to various centers on a particular topic, such as energy balance research. And what we're trying to do is right up front, when different entities are applying for these grants, in centers we would say you need to have a data sharing agreement, and the data and measures and constructs that come out of this work that we fund with taxpayer dollars, be prepared to share that. But this is a slow process of culture change, especially in behavioral and social science research, as opposed to genomics and proteomics research, where they're already used to opening up their data when they publish. And our academic system, our funding systems, they don't do that yet, but we're trying to slowly align those incentives.
So I'd also say that...
especially as ethical, yes. Actually, any grant over $500,000 a year
is required.
So,
what's your name?
I'm also a great believer in taking a lot of baby steps in the way of doing something like data sharing. And oftentimes, you know, one of the first steps you can take is if you have a standard way of sharing the metadata or sharing information about the data that you have already, that can be a way of doing collaborations. And that is, a, you know, many researchers would love to be able to publish more on their data if they are able to get you know, get somebody to contact them about that. And so that gets back to standardized measures that in order to be able to sort of advertise, whether it's on the grid or some other means, that you have data that you'd be willing to collaborate with others on, you need to have standard ways to be able to allow that to be searched. And so that's an area that we're interested in, for sure, and finding ways, and using Phoenix and GEM as an example, where Phoenix and GEM both have sort of like catalogs of measures in many ways. They both collect different kinds of information about maybe sometimes the same measures, And one thing I'm doing in the division is starting to work with, you know, how do you start to create the crosswalks? How do you make sure that you can do a search so that it doesn't matter whether it's in your Phoenix system, or which is maybe more clinically and genomically focused, or GEM, which has more of the behavioral aspects and social science aspects, how can you do a search across both of those and start treating them like item banks, essentially, with these measures? So I think it's a very good question, and to get there, getting people comfortable with the idea of just sharing information about their data first, and then I think one thing that is not well appreciated is how important it is that when you're developing systems, software systems, that it's very clear to researchers, in our case, that these protections are in place and that you can show that, you know, you're not going to lose things, and it's a very transparent process, that whether it's data use agreements or whatever it might be, I think oftentimes it gets obfuscated unnecessarily. And as a recovering programmer developer, I'd say oftentimes it's because programmers and developers have their own ideas about what needs to happen, and you need to get more people involved that are interested in using interfaces.
Going back to your question of what I would say, in addition to NCI putting out research opportunities, I think you need to put out some training opportunities. I think that in the School of Public Health, you have a lot of students at the master's level and the doctoral level who are doing social and behavior medicine and are very interested in informatics, but don't have people within the department who have this kind of knowledge and expertise, and so they're not supported in being able to pursue this line of research, and they're your future researchers who can tie this together and take the next step. So I think that's an opportunity to look at, whether it's training grants or training seminars or other kinds of venues, but I think there's a need for that.
We're speaking at the American Medical Informatics Association conference next week in DC, and it's a joint session with Society of Behavioral Medicine Leadership, NCI, and AMIA Leadership, because they've been on the forefront of this push to really train public health informaticians. And you're right, I think it's important that we need to go from a bottom-up approach as well when we're talking about this.
I don't know if this is quite what you were looking for, but from a research aspect of getting better use out of state cancer registry data through SEER and NPCR, it would be great if NCI and CDC get together with NACER to come up with a central IRB that researchers could apply to. NRTI has worked with numerous state cancer registries together on a project, and having to go to each individual state IRB is incredibly time consuming and kind of counterproductive to effectively using the data. I know that's kind of a pipe dream, but because each state has their own laws and regulations as to, you know, we're in contact with 42 different states right now. So anyway, just throwing that out there.
NCHS is launching their community or their health data warehouse, I think, in December. And it's building on data.gov, and they're trying to address some of those issues by getting more data out.
To be great. Because it's not so much the, you know, just getting at rates and non-PHI sort of data, it's getting at the actual PHI sort of level data that you need for certain types of studies in multiple states.
I just want to wrap up with one final comment. So you have created these incredible tools and resources. Now, I think a lot of the success is going to depend on us. And I'm wondering how many people in the audience might be willing to provide feedback or to participate in these tools and using these tools. Yeah. So I think it's going to be great. And now I would like to thank you very, very much, both for the time that you've put into developing these resources, as well as for coming today to talk to us and to thank the audience as well.